This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
For writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tan Talk Radio Network studio here in absolutely glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book.
Today is a special day. I am going to be talking to editors of National Geographic books. With the upcoming holiday season, they are the best gifts that you can give. But first, I want to remind you of the upcoming guests here on Joy on Paper. On November 20th, I have David Baldacci. He is back. And as always, he is so prolific. And he is back with a new book called Long Road to Mercy, in which he introduces a new series with a female lead, FBI agent Atlee Pine. It is going to be exciting for all of you. And it's very exciting for me because I already got the book. And this is one of the joys of my life, is that I get these books before everybody else. And so it's always so exciting to have these books. And that reminds me that I am giving away a first edition book every month. All you have to do is go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper, sign up there, and I will be giving one first edition book out to one of you lucky listeners. So go to my webpage. It's radio-joyonpaper. And who knows, you might have a first edition. And I tell you, first editions can turn out to be very, very valuable. And they're worth saving. So, and of course, make sure that you save it with the cover jacket, because that's what determines the value. But I'm very happy that I'm going to be able to do that for all of you. So if you just sign up, and one lucky person will get it. And then when you do, if you do win, please take a photo of yourself. Take a selfie of yourself. Everybody likes to take selfies. And post it on my Facebook page, which is Radio Joy on Paper. And I want to thank all of you for who have been going to my Facebook page and liking me and sharing my post, because that's one of the things that we have to do. And this is so funny for authors and for people like me in the business. You have to do the Facebook page. And I wanted to just say thank you to all of you who have gone to the Facebook page, and please, please share my postings. I am doing more videos and promos for authors, because I think it's very important. And I am also doing a lot to support NaNoWriMo this month. It is National Novel Writing Month, and I hope that you are all writing your novel and have taken up this challenge. I have done it, and I have already written about 4,000 words this month. I'm not going quite as fast as I should, and I'm going to take this upcoming weekend to catch up, because you're supposed to do around 1,600 words a day. But you can do, some days you can do less, some days you can do more. And this upcoming weekend I'm going to spend time catching up, but it is lots of fun. And please, if you are doing NaNoWriMo, send me a message there on my Facebook page, Radio Joy on Paper, and share your experience. And I am going to be inviting two or three people who have finished NaNoWriMo to come on the program sometime in December, and we will talk about your experience, and it will be lots of fun just to know how you've done. And you know, share the joy that you've discovered in writing. And I also want to remind you again, I have so many wonderful guests. Well, I always have wonderful guests, but I have so many coming up. And on November 15th, I have Mary Higgins Clark, and she's back again, as always. She's coming out with a wonderful new thriller. And so it's always exciting. The new book is called You Don't Own Me. And she, it's one of her books that she does with Alifair Burke, who was at BoucherCon 2018, and it was so much fun to meet Alifair there. So this is another wonderful program that I'm going to be having. And even before that is on November 13th, and this is really exciting, I have Margaret George for her new book, Splendor Before the Dark, a novel about Nero. This is the second in her Nero series, and it's fascinating. And nobody else could write about Nero like Margaret George, because she really gets into the character and takes you back into Rome, and it's an exciting read. And I am also excited about it because my son is going to be meeting her on November 14th. It gives me such a kick that Margaret is so sweet and so kind, and so she's going to be meeting my son on the 14th because he's picking up an autographed copy of a first edition for me. But it's just wonderful that she's going to be on the program again. And coming up on this Thursday, I have a wonderful guest, and this is somebody that all of you, especially in the local area, should be interested in, but anyone all across the country. It is always fun to have a literary agent on my program, and so I was so thrilled. At BoucherCon, I met Sharon Belcastro, and Sharon is absolutely delightful, and she has a wonderful agency, a literary agency called Belcastro Agency. Why not? If it's your agency, name it after yourself. It's a full-service literary agency, and she represents authors in the genre of women's fiction. And I know that she's lots of fun. She's very, very bright, and one of the things that when you meet a literary agent, you want someone who is passionate, someone who just gets a thrill out of finding an author and working with an author. And that's what you will see with Sharon Belcastro. We'll talk about everything. We'll talk about that horrible thing called the query letter. And we'll talk about foreign translations and audio and film and television rights and all of that good stuff, because that is what Sharon does. And the wonderful thing about having a literary agent is that they prepare you for the big time, because it's not easy. It's really not easy to get published by a major publisher. But if you have the right literary agent, it just makes makes it so much easier. And so I'm really thrilled that Sharon's going to be here. She will answer your questions. And if you have a question, you can go to my website, and my contact information is there. You can send me an email if you have a particular question that you want me to ask Sharon. But we will talk about everything, and it's, you know, she's just having fun. I think she, one of the things when I was at BoucherCon, I thought, whoa, this is fun when you have a job that you really, really enjoy. And Sharon certainly enjoys working with authors. So it's going to be great to have her here in the studio. And now I want to get to my first interview with a Nat Geo editor. I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper a photographer who is simply amazing. And I am so happy that he is here with me today. Mark Thyssen, you are an incredible photographer.
Oh, well, thank you. Don't embarrass me like that.
Oh, wow. Well, you are amazing. And the new book from National Geographic, Spectacle, Rare and Astonishing Photographs, is it's spectacular. That's the word for it.
Yes, and, you know, this is a book in the tradition of great National Geographic photo books. It's a coffee table-sized book. It's full of photography, not a lot of words. I wrote the foreword of it, but most of it is just pictures wall to wall, edge to edge, spectacular pictures of our world.
Wow. You know, so were you part of the choosing the photographs?
I was part of this editorial team of about 20 people who went through our archives and distilled down it. A lot of some of these pictures have never been published before, and distilled down photos into about four chapters. One is called Chaos, one Surprise, another one is Beauty, and the final chapter is Awe. And this book is full of moments. Each one of these photographs is a moment in time. You know, and as a photographer, I can tell you that it's rare when the light and the composition and the moment all add up to produce a photograph so great that you can't believe you took it. But when you look at the back of your camera, you're like, oh my gosh, did I take that photo? Oh my, wow. And then this book is full of those kind of moments from lots of different photographers.
Well, really, since 1888, National Geographic has just done so much for nature and so much with all of these wonderful photographs that have been, you know, done over the years, and then to put them in a book like this, which is so beautiful. The production values are perfect, and they are moments in time. But what I found myself doing, I'm like on one page for a long time because I'm looking at it. I can't believe some of them. They're so beautiful, and you as a viewer, you say, how did he do that? How did she do it? How did they just stand there or sit there? Because sometimes I think it takes a long time to get that perfect shot, and it blows your mind.
Well, you know, each one of these pictures in this book takes planning. You just don't walk out your front door and take any of the pictures that are in this book. It takes planning and commitment, you know, and dogged determination to be out there when stuff is happening, when to get that early morning light on the landscape in the middle of nowhere, to be out there at night with a fire crew when they're setting a backfire. And sometimes it just takes dumb luck to be in the right place at the right time.
Well,
and then I always say there's like a little bit of magic that makes it all work.
It is magical. And, of course, mentioning a fire, your photograph about the fire. Tell us the story behind how you are so determined to get great photos of the fires that you actually became a firefighter.
That's right. In the 90s, I wanted to start a personal project on wildland firefighters. A buddy of mine in the fire world said, hey, I can get you this training. So in the late 90s, I went through fire school and learned how to and became a certified wildland firefighter, not to fight fires, but to get better access to the fire ground where the firefighters are actively working the fire.
And it's such
no media get access to that.
No, it's such dangerous work, and your photograph is it's so beautiful.
Well, thank you. It's the result of also of a lot of other people besides myself. It's photo editors. Like I said, these are part of magazine stories. And they're photo editors who have been able to curate these pictures and bring them together to create this wonderful book.
Well, you know the name of my program is Joy on Paper. And it's a program for writers and those who dream of writing. So can you guess what my favorite photo in this book is?
Your favorite photo in the book. Let's see.
It's the library at Trinity College.
Oh, there you go. Right.
I mean,
sure.
I'm like, I for the past, ever since I got the book, I'm sitting there just looking at that and dreaming about being back there because it is such a gorgeous place. And this photo captures it. It's just absolute joy.
That's great. Yeah. And so this book will take you places. It allows you to escape, which I think is so important now, to escape kind of it within this book and let it take you all around the world to these special places.
Wow. I want everyone, my listeners, to think about this. When you are visiting people this Thanksgiving, the best gift really is a book, because bringing wine or flowers, people already have wine and flowers. So it is a book that is a lasting gift. It'll be looked at, a beautiful coffee table book like this will be looked at every Thanksgiving for the rest of their lives. And I cannot think of a, well, any of the Nat Geo books are great, but this one is perfect for Thanksgiving because you're sitting there and you look at these photographs, and some people have been to some places, you know, that are in the photographs, and other people are interested in fish or whatever. And it really, there's, it really opens up lots of conversations, and particularly this Thanksgiving, nobody wants to talk about politics. So everybody should be...
That's right.
Everybody should be talking about these beautiful photographs. There's one that I keep looking at it because it's so beautiful, and it's this the one in New Zealand, the reflected tree?
Reflected...
You know, the tree in the early morning light, the one... A solitary tree in a lake, and it's reflected.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And I kept
looking
saying,
at it now.
How could it be a photograph? It's like it's a painting. It's an incredible moment in time.
And then the page just opposite it is of a desert landscape with a similar lone tree. And this is how our editors have juxtaposed these two very different photographs. And paired them up so that they create new meaning.
This is exactly what you said, because I love the way that they've taken, like the tulip one. I had never seen, and I sort of never even imagined what tulips would look like growing in a field from a height. And those those stripes of color, it's amazing. And then on the other side, you have... birch tree shadows, which again, it's the combination of looking at those two photographs at the same time. It's really magical.
Oh yeah, and it's a lot of fun. And the photography in here is timeless. This is a book that you can have for generations, and your friends and your family can it'll last a very long time.
Well, exactly. I mean, just like. I still have a couple hundred National Geographic, the magazine, the yellow magazine. I see it, and I could just pick one up at random. I don't know if it's a 1953 one or a 1978 one, or I think my oldest one is a 1947 one. It's just such a joy [S2] Wow. [S1] To open them up and just look at them, As you said, they are timeless. These are photographs that people will be looking at for hundreds and hundreds of years, as long as we're around, and just enjoying them so much.
That's right. Like I said, the reason that National Geographic does what it does, and nobody else can do it the same way we do, is because we have a tremendous amount of resources and very talented people who can put these pictures together, who can go out and take these pictures. And this book, a book like this, is not laid out in an afternoon between coffee breaks. It is done over months, and it's gone over and over, and the layouts are changed, and it evolves, and it gets better and better and better. And then they show it to fresh eyes, some other editors who haven't seen it yet, and then they give their input. And it's curated in that way so that we give you the best we can give you. And at National Geographic, it's all about quality.
Oh, I turn the page and I say, wow, everyone is like better than the next, the last one. And I'm not even sure. I can't ask you which one is your favorite, because do you possibly have a favorite? It's amazing. There are so many from China that just are gripping. Amazing.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, one of my favorites, though, is something that a picture that I took that is near the beginning of the book. It's on page 16.
16.
And a lot of people don't know what it is when you first look at it. Can you tell me what that is? Do you have the book with you?
Yeah, I have it. I have it with me. Well,
yeah.
When I first looked at it, I said to myself, I thought it was like a magical leaf or Christmas tree. And I thought, what is that? And wow,
So this is a water balloon breaking at the moment that it's bursting.
How did you do
that? So it's captured with high-speed strobe. So I suspended this water balloon in front of a black background. And behind the water balloon, I have a flash. And I have a flash that has a very short flash duration, so it freezes the action at a very, very fast, faster than a camera shutter can. And then I popped this balloon, and the sound of, you can see the pin that I popped it with at the bottom.
Yes.
And it popped this balloon, and the balloon, the plastic of the balloon, disappeared very quickly, but then the flash went off, and it captured that moment when the water is still in the shape of a balloon.
Whoa.
You're seeing. We've all seen water balloons break, but this is that moment that you can't see that actually happens. And that's one of the beauty of photography, is that if you can master the tools, you can show pictures of common things in unique ways.
Well, this is the reason that you are an award-winning photographer, because that is a difficult shoot.
And it was fun, too. We didn't turn out to do this. We said, let's just play around with high-speed strobe and see what we can make happen. So that's kind of the joy of my job, is being able to kind of to go on these journeys of discovery and see what we can make out of something very ordinary.
And I love some of the... I like the animal ones, but I wanted to say that one of the ones that I'm just trying to turn to it now is Pokemon. The Pokemon going in an elevator. And because my boys were so crazy about Pokemon, it just puts a smile on my face. And I'm sure anybody sitting around at the holidays and they're going through this, all the millennials, because my son's now a millennial, he'll say, oh, that's Pokemon, I want my Pokemon, where's my Pokemon? And I will be able to say, Mommy saved your Pokemon. I still have it. I did this giant, you know, at the time he wanted this giant Pokemon, and I have this giant Pokemon on the guest room bed, you know, it was important to him, but I think he'll love to see it. I'm waiting. He's going to be home at Thanksgiving, and I know when he goes through the book, that's going to be one of the first ones he's going to stop at. But you know, everyone and the ones with people, National Geographic photographers are so great at catching that one moment in time when people's faces are just something special. The expression on their faces, it's, you stop and you say, in a way, it's wonderful, because what happens is you see these looks on their face and you say, we're all humans, we're all alike in so many ways, and it would be so nice if I could know this person, or we would be friends. And I always get that with the National Geographic photos that include people in them.
Well, National Geographic has a tradition of photographing people and cultures from throughout the world and bringing that to our readers. And as I can speak for myself, the best thing about being a National Geographic photographer is not getting your pictures published in the magazine or in books like this. I mean, that's happened, and that kind of wears off rather quickly, that thrill. The real joy are the people that you get to meet along the way. The firefighters that I get to meet in the middle of the night doing a burnout operation in the middle of Montana, or our guides who are helping us out in Madagascar as I'm trying to photograph a new species of lemur, or the scientists that I'm with in Barrow, Alaska, as they are testing a piece of scientific instrument under the ice that they might send to Europa to look for new life forms. That's the real joy of my job, is meeting all these wonderful people that I never would have met any other way. But part of the deal is coming back with pictures nobody's seen before.
Well, Mark, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy to talk to you. You are a brilliant photographer, and the book is absolutely marvelous. And I'm going to recommend it to everyone to get this book for the holidays that are coming up. And it will be a wonderful, wonderful and treasured gift that you give to anybody.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we'll take a commercial break and be right back with another Nat Geo editor.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
My Pillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper the guy with one of the best jobs in the world. Jonathan Bailey is the Executive Vice President and Chief Scientist of the National Geographic Society, and he is here today to talk to me about this absolutely fabulous book that just came out. It's called The Splendor of Birds, Art and Photographs from National Geographic. Whoa, Jonathan, this is amazing.
It is an amazing book. It's phenomenal. And it's different from any other bird book I've ever seen.
It is. Oh, I am so thrilled with this book. I am from Michigan's Upper Peninsula, which, as you know, is one of the places where the brilliant photographer George Shiras started recording the lives of birds.
Wow. There's so many iconic photographers and storytellers that are also documented in the book. So you get the history of the birds through time, but also you follow some of the people through time, which is another magical component of having almost a history book of natural history.
Well, you know, Ernest Hemingway, of course, loved the Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And so he always said that one of the most interesting people he ever met was the George Shiras, who became, you know, one of your most famous and iconic photographers. And all of the photographers in this book are just amazing.
Yes, I actually spent a lot of time going to the Pelican Island when I was younger, and that's the first wildlife reserve that was set up in America, and it was set up by George Shiraz, and he was actually a he would shoot birds, and then he decided later in life to take up the camera and to start capturing them, and then he realized that there was these great declines occurring because of the hat trade. People were taking these feathers from things like egrets or from brown pelicans or from roseate spoonbills, and he really lobbied and eventually created that reserve, and then that led to the entire network of national wildlife refuge systems. So you have these amazing photographers and statesmen as well at the time, but that have really set the ground for the conservation work we see today.
And it is so important. When anyone sits with this book, you do it half. Sometimes you start just smiling and all laughing out loud when you see some of the photographs. Some of the birds are absolutely, they're so delightful. Like the frigate baby. This little fuzzy frigate baby is so delightful to look at. You could just sit there, you know, for 10 minutes looking at this bird. And then all of the photographs are so beautiful. The flamingos, the owls, they're just amazing photographs.
Well, it's really the best from our archives and the most iconic and in chronological order. And so you get this real history of our relationship with birds, and then you also get a history of the technology and how our ability to capture birds has changed through time or the style. And then finally, you get a chronology of the science and what we knew then and what we know now. And it's a history book in many ways.
It is. It's of course, always Nat Geo books are beautiful. They're the type of books that you just... You can keep reading over and over. They do last for so many years because people never want to stop reading them. And, you know, this program, I have a lot of writers who listen in, and I always tell them that you make your writing come alive. Talk about birds, because birds were very important coming from northern Michigan. For us, I always remember as a child my mother waiting for the first robin to come. And it would just put such a smile on her face. We'd sit out there waiting until we spotted our first robin because they were so important to us, and we knew the new season was coming. And that's why I just encourage people to go to their local botanical gardens or zoos and just relax and look at these beautiful birds.
I completely agree. And in modern society and living in cities, we often lose touch with all these rhythms of life, and many of us don't know when the tides are or what the moon phase is or when birds are migrating and or when the frogs should start calling, and I think we're just happier people when we're more connected to the natural world. And that's one of the reasons I think that bird watching is really starting to take off, as people are yearning for this connection.
It's true. Younger people are doing more bird watching. They tend to want to stay healthier. They walk more than the previous generation. They like to go for these walks in nature, and bird watching is such a wonderful thing for them to do while they're out there. You know, just it adds an extra layer of excitement when you're out walking. That you're not just walking along, you know, listening to you know, music on your earbuds, but that you actually stop and listen to nature and listen to birds, because it is so magical when you hear the birds singing. This is real glory.
It is, and it's really part of us. And you can also, you know, you can walk through and just enjoy it and soak it all in. But then there's also now tools that we can use through the new technology that we have, such as our phones, where we can collect data and be part of citizen science, so help either photograph the species or document the species and where they are and put them in big databases like eBird, which is run by the Ornithology Lab of Cornell, or put them into iNaturalist, which is a project with National Geographic. And then we can start to understand where the birds are and how their distribution's changing over time, and even look at the impact of things like climate change on birds, from data people are helping to collect.
And to think more about the things that really affect birds and that can really cause harm, whether it's we talk about, of course, there's, you know, the windmills, people worry about that. I've been recently reading about how they plan to put like maybe a thousand square miles of land in the middle of Africa and turn it into solar panels, which I'm terrified of what that will do to the birds and the migration, because the migration patterns are so important for Europe and, you know, between the birds coming from Europe and then going down through Africa every year. It scares me.
It's tough for a migrating species because there's not just one place you have to make sure is safe for your survival. You have to have your winter range, your summer range, and your corridor all intact. And with the world changing so much, it's so easy just to take out one part of that, and that sort of foils the whole journey and in many ways the ability for that species to exist. And some are more adaptable than others, but some are very rigid and just can't deal with that change. And in that case, we'll go extinct.
And some of them, they have this homing mechanism within them that they want to go where they want to go, you know. And it's,
exactly.
You know, it's and it's built into them. Having lived both in the Middle East and in England for a long time, I would watch for the birds and watch the changes as the birds would, you know, disappear and come back. And it's just so important that people are more aware of it. And this book, which is, of course, just beautiful, The Splendor of Birds, is a book that I think people should get. And also, it's a perfect gift, isn't it? Anybody would just...
It is.
Oh, if you...
It's so different than any other bird book. And it's iconic, and it has many images that we grew up with. And so you connect through that as well. My father is just the most avid birder in the world, and I've got him every kind of book I can imagine. But this one I can give him, and I know it'll be totally, totally different, and he'll absolutely love it and cherish every page.
Well, I know you've written some books for children, like Animals at the Edge, Saving the World's Rarest Creatures. And this is, I think, it's such a wonderful thing to do, to get children involved at an early age, to encourage them to love birds and then to encourage them to share it with their families, to do bird walking and watches and go out for walks and really pay attention to the birds.
That is it. I mean, the first thing is that we just understand them and we care more, and then we'll make the right decisions to protect them. And if you look through the book and you start out, it's quite a utilitarian relationship with birds, and then we come to appreciate the splendor and wonder of birds, and there's a much bigger movement now to protect them than there was in the past. But we need to keep that that direction and get more and more momentum to make sure that the species that are currently vulnerable are being looked after in terms of making sure they have habitat, or that they aren't threatened by introduced species, or they aren't being hunted, or they aren't or they're able to have enough kind of protection in their habitat not to be vulnerable or as vulnerable to climate change.
Well, how many species are in danger?
Well, about 13% of the world's birds are threatened with extinction, and 222 are critically endangered. About 461 are endangered, and about 786 are vulnerable. And then there's a bunch that haven't been seen in years, and they might be extinct, and there's about 21 of those. So quite a few birds globally are threatened with extinction. Compared to other groups like mammals, it's a bit lower in terms of the percentage, and that's because birds are more mobile and they're less restricted in terms of their range. But nonetheless, the trends are moving overall in the wrong direction.
I know, and that's why it's so sad. That's why it's important to get people involved in taking care of birds and watching that we help preserve them, because they are so fantastic. And what I love about this book is you have this lovely combination of birds in with people. And when people look at this and they see a child surrounded by birds and the smile on her face, and it's just so wonderful and so heartwarming, that I think this book will really open people's eyes of the importance of birds.
Yes, I mean, since its inception, National Geographic has always been about cultural diversity and biological diversity, essentially. And so the people part is really important in the interaction between humans and wildlife. And you can see that magical interaction in the pictures in this book. And the important thing is that we continue to build on that and maintain that connection between people and wildlife so that we ensure that we protect it into the future.
Now, have you always been interested in birds?
Well, my father was a big birder, and so all our holidays were based on birding. And then my mother wrote children's books, and that's how I got into writing those children's books. But with those interests, I think maybe I didn't have a choice, but I bended my PhD on birds, and I've always been fascinated with them. They're just the most magical, wonderful creatures, and they also are really an indicator for broader biodiversity and can tell us, you know, about other species and where they might be vulnerable.
Well, I was just talking to George Stone, who, of course, did the Nat Geo book, The 500 Journeys of a Lifetime, and I told him that I thought he had the most perfect job, but I'm not sure if it's not you, because the two of you are so lucky. I mean, you're so blessed that you get to spend your lives looking at beautiful photographs and getting paid for it and having lots of fun just working with photographers and all of the wonderful people at Nat Geo who really are, you guys are amazing. It every time I get one of your books, I think, wow, this one's better, and this one, they get better all the time. And I was looking at one of the pictures, and I thought, well, this is so cute. Babe, the great hornbill. You know, that picture of this bird, this guy holding this beautiful bird, it's just so, you say, whoa, I wish people could just experience this. And there are zoos and local parks where there are appreciation points where, you know, people can interact with birds, and I hope that people will be inspired by this book.
I mean, the magic about working at National Geographic is all the wonderful people you get to work with, and historically we've all heard of Jane Goodall or Jacques Cousteau, but there's a whole generation coming up that we're working with to get out into the field and to work with birds and help protect them, and we've given out about 14,000 grants, and we have an early career program where we're helping provide training, tools, and technology, and helping them address some of the greatest challenges of the 21st century, and providing citizen science tools as well as technology in our labs here that we have at National Geographic. And some of our biggest programs like Pristine Seas or our plastics program are also helping to protect birds on a bigger scale. They just, it is the most wonderful place to work, but it's really the inspiration of the people around you that just keep you going and make you realize that together we can actually reverse the decline of these spectacular species.
And I know that you're working with United for Wildlife, right?
Yes, we are working. I was working very closely with them in the UK, and we're working with them right now on developing digital training tools for young conservationists around the world. You can have training at a university, but limited people can do that. We want everyone from every country to have access to the best education. So that's what we're doing with them.
Well, that's it's wonderful work. You know, I want to tell everyone, this is a book that if you give this as a gift to someone over the holidays, Thanksgiving, all the other holidays coming up, they will treasure this forever. You know, I still, my family was, you know, we were always getting National Geographic magazines, and I still have hundreds of them because that's what I grew up on. That's how I learned about the world. And that's why I became a world traveler. I traveled and I lived all over the place, partly because of Nat Geo books, magazines. I'd open them up as a child, and that's where I'd want to go.
A magical book to explore, and the images are ones that people will remember from certain times in their life, and you want to keep going back to it. It's really an art piece.
It is. Now, do you have a favorite bird? Is there one bird that really you follow along? You do.
Well, I love the, there's a couple. I mean, the Rosie at Spoonbill is a wonderful one. My sister used to call them the Wosie at Spoonbills, and I have a fond memory of that. that little bee, that little hummingbird bee is just such a tiny, vulnerable, beautiful creature, if you see that image there. But then working in the rainforest, there's a poorly documented species called Picathartes, which every birder out there will want to have on their list. And I had lots of time with them living in the rainforest for 2 years studying gorillas. So that's one of my favorite ones because I've been able to just watch and observe their behavior, and they're so rare. But there's so many special species in this book. Unfortunately, the ivory burrow woodpecker is a stunning, beautiful one, but probably doesn't exist anymore. But it's also covered in the book.
Well, I think the book is inspiring for people who want to do something good in the world. And it's also inspiring as for all the writers out there just to look at the pictures and to include them in. One nice thing is if you include a bird in your book, if you write about a bird, it makes the people who have noticed the bird, whoever your character is, special. Because if sometimes writers forget to put the birds and the bees and the flowers in a book, but it really does enhance a book when even a mystery story, it is wonderful to have a reference to birds in that. I always love that.
But they're so culturally iconic, and across all cultures, there's an important role for birds. And there's something about them that just make us smile. I mean, they're wonderful, and they wake us up in the morning. They're great creatures, and they're kind of the constant singers. And, you know, we just want to make sure that as we evolve as a society, we continue to make space for these creatures that have always been with us.
Well, again, I want to thank you so much, Jonathan, for being on Joy on Paper today. I think the work that you're doing is so special, and you are so special for this love that you have for birds and the work that you're doing to help protect them. So again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And I'm going to continue recommending this on every program for the rest of the year. I'm going to be holding up the book I'm holding up the cover. The book is heavy. I mean, this is
pretty heavy. Yeah. You'll be quite strong.
and there are so many wonderful, wonderful photographs in here. So again, thank you so much for joining me today.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
That was lots of fun. I want to thank Nat Geo for sending me all of these wonderful books. They are really the best gifts that you can give. They last forever because no one ever wants to stop reading them. For the upcoming holiday season, there really is no better gift than a Nat Geo book. They are treasured, and they will last for a lifetime.
I just want to add also, if this is the time of the year that you have to make sure that you go to Writer's Digest and check out what competitions they have for all of you independent writers. There are some competitions coming up. Also, the San Francisco Writers Competition is coming up, so you should be looking into that too. And remember what I tell you, if you're looking for an agent, you have to go to Publishers Weekly. Do not buy one of those ABC agent books. They don't work. You really won't find an agent that way. You have to go to Publishers Weekly and find out which agents are active at the moment. And those are the agents that you want to represent you. So go to Publishers Weekly and go to their, they have a spot there with the weekly deals, and you will be able to find out an agent's name. And that's the best way to find an agent.
Before we go today, I want to play one of Rita Moreau's wonderful book buzzes. She's having lots of fun doing these for you, and I hope that you will read the books that she recommends.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. Fans of cozy whodunits set in Florida will love this new cozy. Peppermint Mocha Murder, from Pam Mall. Here's the buzz. Molly Brewster's new cafe bookshop is the go-to spot for strong coffee, flaky pastries, and juicy gossip. Yummy! But everything changes when the tide washes a dead body up on shore, practically on the shop's doorstep. As a newcomer to the tight-knit South Florida village, the local sheriff pegs Molly as the prime suspect. Determined to track down the real killer to clear her name, Molly enlists the help of her loyal chocolate lab, Snickers, her cantankerous Granny Dee, and the handsome Deputy Lucky. To save the season, she will have to catch a culinary killer. Whoa, good one. I really liked the way the author included a cast of characters at the beginning of the cozy, as well as a menu of recipes. I thought that was very clever. Made me want to read on just to find out more about these characters and look up some of the recipes. So, cozy readers, if you like a cozy with twists you won't see coming, then you'll love Pam Mall's delectable whodunit, Peppermint Mocha Murder, a funny mystery for festive foodies. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
And meanwhile, remember what I tell everyone, one of the joys of life, right, everybody, is to see your words on paper and just have fun with it. That's all I can say. Just have fun with writing. And make sure that you say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. And thank you, Ed. Thank you for everything that you do for me. And we really appreciate you. Bye-bye now.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I. Or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
Are you glad that Hurricane Florence missed you? That's understandable. But have you considered those who live where Florence did her worst? Just a year ago, Tampa and St. Petersburg suffered damage from a hurricane. Remember how long it took to recover? During that crucial time, the Red Cross was here to help. Now, the Red Cross needs your help. Please donate generously to redcross.org. Please help them help others.